This is episode 22 of the Empowering Elves podcast. Today, Dr. Andrea Hongensfeld will talk about why she cautions us from rushing back to the way things used to be before school closures. Welcome to the Empowering Elves podcast. I'm Tan Nguyen, and the goal of this podcast is to serve language learners just like me and to empower passionate teachers just like you. I know that some of you are heading back to school in a month's time, but don't rush back to the way things used to be. In a previous episode, I asked Andrea for yellow light regarding this COVID-19 experience. This is what she said.
I think we often talk about we can't wait to get back to normal. And I'd like to caution everybody to slow down a little bit and redefine what is normal. What do we really want to get back to? Because it's not going to be, it cannot be the way we have done education in the past. Right. I think this whole crisis experience will reshape our thinking as educators. It will have impact on society beyond the weeks or the months that we are enduring this crisis. So I think we have to just slow down and reflect on what do we want that new normal to be.
That comment saved me for weeks, until I finally found the courage to ask her to explain what she meant by that. In this episode, Andrew will share the lessons that school closures can teach us so that we can lean into a new normal instead of going back to the way things used to be. Because for many, the way things used to be were highly inequitable. The format of this episode is very special. Andrew and I had recorded this episode in its entirety live, but when I went to edit it, there was no sound. Andrea graciously agreed to use Voxer to have an asynchronous podcast interview. I would send a voice message at a time to Andrea and she would listen to them. When she was ready, she responded. Then we repeated this process. You'll hear the sound throughout this podcast. That's the sound effect for Voxer to indicate that a new message is being recorded. We were able to save the last 10 minutes of the original recording, so I'll let you know when that is. Before we listen to today's episode, I'd like to share a testimony from an educator who participated in one of my online courses.
Hi, my name is Mary, and I recently took part in the January 2020 Scaffolding for Elves hosted by Tan. It was a phenomenal course, to say the least. Really one of the best things I've done recently. Best investment of time and money. We would gather in a Google Classroom, and Tan was very effective at hosting this and leading it, but also in encouraging us to engage with one another. As a teacher, I very seldom have people come up to me and say, hey, Mary, what are you struggling with? What would you like a little help with? And that happened almost every week with each of us. We would bring something that was frustrating, being it small or large, but everything was always geared around helping our elves comprehend and understand and grow better. You will meet people from around the world. Classroom will become a much larger place. So again, I encourage you to participate and enjoy. Take care.
If you want to personalize your professional learning, please consider enrolling in either my scaffolding course or my teacher collaboration course. You can go to empoweringells.com and look for the courses tab to learn more. Now, on to today's episode.
Hey, Andrea, thank you so much for being so kind and patient with offering to re-record. And instead, this we'll use this method as it's so much easier and it honors your time and it doesn't require you to sit down anymore. So I just really appreciate it.
Normally when I have guests on, I would have them introduce themselves and talk about their research, their book or their projects or their institutions that they're from. But because you're a friend of the podcast and because you've been a guest four times now, this is your fourth, which makes you the most frequented expert on the podcast, I wanted to do something different. I wanted to ask you, how are you doing? How are you faring? How are you coping with dealing with all of these changes? I know that now that you're a stay-at-home mother because you have kids at home and now you're homeschooling them. I also know that you're a dean at Molloy College. How are you dealing with that? You have such a presence on Twitter and you have lots of followers and admirers, and I know that they would love to hear how you're doing with all of this.
First of all, thank you so much for inviting me again to be on your podcast.
It is always an absolute pleasure to speak with you and to really engage in an exchange with you. I learn so much from every conversation that we have. And your question is really very poignant because, in all honesty and embracing my vulnerability, I am struggling with the coronavirus situation. And who wouldn't? So as you mentioned, I am a mom of three kids. Everybody's home, three boys, a husband, and a dog, 24/7, because we are sheltering in place in New York. And we're trying to be very mindful of our governor's guidance, as well as just common sense rules about how to live our daily lives. So there is homeschooling going on. There are sibling rivalry clashes going on. Of course, I'm trying to do my work as an associate dean and director of an educational doctoral program in educational leadership for diverse learning communities at Molloy College. Here is my 15-second commercial, focusing on social justice and equity, and trying to plan some wonderful end of year celebrations for our first group of 7 graduates in the program, and many other things such as coming on interviews, doing webinars and podcasts, as well as other professional learning opportunities virtually that I'm invited to do. And juggling all of this has been quite challenging, but recently I've learned from a colleague that there are silver linings and golden linings, and this colleague said to me that silver linings are the personal positive outcomes of a really bad situation, and golden linings are the professional outcomes of a challenging situation. And I can tell you that the silver lining personally is that I'm not flying, I'm not traveling, I'm not staying away from my family. So I spend more time at home. We cook big meals, we bake cookies and brownies and have ice cream every night. So there are just some special things that we are doing now, play Monopoly and other games as well, that we normally did not have a chance to do. And the golden lining for me is just the many, many opportunities to engage in conversations around challenges that educators face and trying to co-construct meaning out of all of this, such as this podcast with you. So thank you.
Oh, Andrea, that was so vulnerable and brave of you to say that and share that, because I know for one, me personally, I see you as invincible. You're like a superwoman. You do all these things. You travel around the world to support teachers. You run a course at Molloy. You support PhD candidates. And you also produce like what seems like a book a year. And we love your books. And the fact that you are saying that, yeah, I'm struggling too, you're struggling too, makes us feel so much better, because, okay, if Dr. Andrea Hogginsfeld is doing this and she's struggling, it's okay for us to struggle. So thank you for sharing that. The seed of this episode was sown several episodes ago when I had you, Lisa Estrada, and Heather Parrish together to talk about your experience with working with language learners and the use of intentional technology. And at the end of the episode, I asked you, hey, what's your yellow light? What should we slow down with? What should we caution and think about first? And you said, your yellow was to ask teachers to slow down, and you would caution them to not return to the way things used to be. And I didn't get to ask you what you meant by that. And so I wanted to have you come back and share that, because I thought, wow, that is a statement that we need to unpack, because I think there's lots of gems of wisdom in there. So can you talk about that?
It was wonderful to have a conversation with you a few weeks ago, and I'm really honored that we have the opportunity to continue our conversation today. I have been reflecting a lot on where we are with remote learning, online learning, distance learning, learning from home, teaching from home, all of these many different phrases and expressions that we use to describe our current experience. But it really is not online learning or e-learning or distance learning by choice. Every one of us who have found ourselves in this situation, we were thrown into it by a pandemic, and it brought some critical issues to the forefront. One of those issues is inequities. One of those other issues are the digital divide and access to high quality education and powerful pedagogical and technological tools that teachers can employ in their classrooms. And thinking about who has these tools at their fingertips. So inequities among schools, communities, and what kind of teaching and learning takes place in various classrooms and now in the remote situation certainly will give us a pause before we want to restart our schools. How can we change everything or whatever we need to about education as we return? The most important dimensions, of course, of these considerations are related to safety and consideration for social or physical distancing, frequent temperature checks, monitoring symptoms, and many of those. But I'm not talking about those medical or logistical issues. I'm talking about the pedagogical concerns and returning to a new normal with a consideration for authentic learning experiences, truly meaningful learning experiences that we take something away from these very, very difficult weeks and months that we have been through.
So that's a wonderful place to start. Let's talk about your experience with supporting your children and seeing the kind of work that they were doing at home for their distance learning.
I would be very happy to share my son's experiences with their music teachers. So I have three sons, but two of them are still in the K-12 public school system. One is already graduating from college. He is part of the class of 2020. What a year. But getting back to the music experiences with my two sons, the youngest is 9 years old, and his music teacher sent a really fabulous YouTube video to watch. It was about making kitchen music and creating water drums. I was amazed as I was looking at the video how the teacher created out of everyday household items a wonderful ready-to-go musical instrument. This is how you do it. You take your big metal pots and bowls, whatever you have, two or three, and fill them up halfway through with water. Then you take a plastic bowl, much smaller ones, and then you turn the plastic bowls upside down. So the level of the water is midway through the bowl, and then the plastic bowl is on top facing down. Just visualize that. And then take any kind of drumming tool that you might find in your kitchen drawers, such as wooden spoons. And my son was just so excited to recreate that, to try it out. There were other musical moves, so to speak, that you could also use with these tools. Then, after he created his musical instruments, he had to record himself and explain what he did and how he did it. So we had so much fun. It was truly a family engagement type of activity, very authentic, very unique, and showing kids that even if you don't have your fancy, expensive musical instruments that are all locked up in the school right now, you could still create music and bring joy to your home. My other son is in eighth grade, and his music teacher, interestingly, both times it was the music teachers who had these very unique ideas. His music teacher sent a set of interview questions home as one of the assignments. And the questions asked the students to interview somebody, a family member, a relative, a friend, or maybe even a neighbor, of course, using physical distancing and safe actions. And the interviews focused on first musical experiences, the first time somebody went to a concert, the first time somebody realized that music is important to them.
Thank you for sharing those examples with your sons, Andrea, because I think this is what teachers are going to be taking from the distance from learning, and they're going to take it back to school. And I guess what they're taking back is that kids are creating as a form of learning. And so your sons had to find, they were creating instead of regurgitating and reporting back the same thing that the teacher was giving them. They're saying, hey, this is an opportunity for you to be creative. And as you create, you're learning the skills that we're asking you to learn. Another thing is that creating with resources that they already have with them. And so your younger son, he had to find resources at home, the Tupperware that you had, the pots that were used at home. And it's not these things are easy to find. It was finding the resources that they have instead of trying to provide resources. And this right back goes back to creativity, where kids have to say, okay, this is what I have to do. How am I going to do that with the resources that I have? Another thing that your example talked about was choice. Kids had a choice. Your son had a choice in who, your older son had a choice of who he was going to interview. And your younger son had a choice of what are the ways that I'm going to get to make music? What Tupperware am I going to use? What pots am I going to use? What utensils am I going to use to beat on the Tupperware? And so we're providing kids as much choice as possible because we don't have the choices as if we were in school. And the last thing I really appreciated about these examples was that community. You talked about how it was a really lovely learning experience for you and your younger son to problem solve, to figure out, okay, what Tupperware are we going to use? What pots are we going to use? And your older son thought about, oh, you know what, he hasn't seen his uncle in a few months since the lockdown, and this would be a great opportunity to connect with his uncle. And these are both ways that families can connect with learning in low-risk ways. I thought that was just really beautiful.
Thank you so much for highlighting these positive experiences. Or rather, thank you so much for offering such a careful and thoughtful analysis of my children's virtual learning experiences through their music education. As you said, indeed, it was a wonderful community experience, a family experience, and including Uncle Charlie, one of the eldest members of our family, into this family project, into this music project. We actually reached out to the person in the family who is probably the loneliest, who lives alone with four cats and doesn't have a lot of people to talk to. So the musical assignment, the interview assignment, actually became another meaningful opportunity to call him and interview him and show him that we value what he has to offer.
Let's talk about another new normal. You and John Nordemeyer from WIDA co-authored an article for ASCD that you talked about how teacher collaboration is now changing as well. You talked about how teacher collaboration no longer used to be a luxury for some, but now it's a lifeline for many. Can you talk about that? Let's talk about another new normal. You and John Nordemeyer from WIDA co-authored an article for ASCD that you talked about how teacher collaboration is now changing as well. You talked about how teacher collaboration no longer used to be a luxury for some, but now it's a lifeline for many. Can you talk about that?
John and I have been working both in the United States and in the international community around the topic of collaboration and co-teaching for quite some time. And way before COVID-19, we have already often emphasized the importance of collaboration as an important avenue for capacity building, for teachers to support each other, and of course, to have a more profound impact on student learning. In the current circumstances, we certainly noticed that teachers see collaboration as a necessity, no longer a luxury, something that has to be done every single day just to survive, just to make sense of what is happening around us. And as weeks went by, we all of a sudden realized that through collaboration, we're so much more effective with our students. We certainly show a lot of our vulnerabilities. We honestly tell each other what works and what doesn't work. There's no more holding back. And on the other hand, there's also no more holding back when it comes to sharing. We have seen teachers becoming so generous and open-hearted and willing to just share just about everything, the good, the bad, the not so happy, and the success stories as well. Everything that's happening in their personal and professional lives all of a sudden became a lot more transparent and accessible to each other.
Yeah, I'm hearing that from teachers as well. They've been saying, wow, because of school closures, I'm actually collaborating with my teammates more than before. Or actually, some people are saying, this is the first time I'm collaborating with my teammates. And it has been such a positive experience. And I think teachers will bring that back with them when they go back to in-person schooling, that the relationships they've formed now, or the relationships that they're nurturing now, will continue to be nurtured back in in-person schooling, where they share resources, where they collaborate, where they plan, where they possibly can co-teach. I think that your work with Maria has been always trying to get teachers to see the value of collaborating, and I think teachers are seeing that now. They're living it, and they're saying, wow, I'm not going to let this go when schools reopen. So we talked about the instructional level with your kids, with your sons, and we talked about the teacher collaboration level. What do you think districts should do when it comes to what they're learning from this online experience, and what can they take back to their home experiences?
In the past, collaboration often happened as top-down and bottom-up approach met in the middle. What I mean by that, and Maria Dove and I write a lot about this in various publications, is that teachers need to have personal commitment and buy-in, in quotation marks, even though we don't really want to sell anything. But at the same time, administrators, school structures need to offer logistical support and additional opportunities for capacity building. So top-down, bottom-up, meet in the middle. Right now, under COVID-19 conditions, the bottom-up, the teacher-initiated collaborations are so much stronger than ever before. So that is one positive outcome, if we could look for that silver lining of this horrible situation that we're all working through in our respective countries and contexts. What school districts could most focus on is carefully examining the assets that their school communities, their families, their children, their students, and their teachers, as well as fellow administrators, bring to the table when we return. So starting with an asset-based approach allows us to highlight the strengths with which we came out of this pandemic, and also highlight at the same time the areas of need. What should we pay more attention to? What dimensions of inequities are we going to immediately address in the short term? Which of these issues do we have to address in the long term, because there are no fast solutions to? So something that is commonly available in the professional literature is what's called an equity audit. An equity audit allows school districts, administrators, or committees, task forces, to examine to what degree equitable instructional practices, resources, and other dimensions of education are available to all members of the community. The equity audit will simply paint a complex picture. We can't stop there, though. I said simply, probably won't be that simple, but it is a static outcome that school administrators and other participating educators and community members, hopefully parents and students will be involved as well, will get. But the most important next step is, how are we going to act upon the findings of the equity audit? And that's where long-term as well as short-term planning comes in place.
Wow, there's so many things I want to talk about with the equity piece and about district administration level. I think the first thing is, this experience has really spotlighted the inequities for our students from minority backgrounds. It really shows, okay, they don't have these things, access to technology. Now, how are we really addressing it? And then I think when schools reopen, I think that's one of the first things that schools are going to think about. And they're going to say, okay, we're not going to be caught off guard again. How can we plan in the short term, but then also in the long term, where we can address these inequities? I know the first time we talked, you shared this wonderful quote from Brené Brown. Would you like to talk about it? And could you read it and could you talk to us about it?
Brené Brown accurately identified a core problem that we are facing now. We have always been facing this problem. It just wasn't in the forefront this much. So Brené Brown said, we will not go back to normal. Normal never was. Our pre-corona existence was not normal, other than we normalized greed, inequity, exhaustion, depletion, extraction, disconnection, confusion, rage, hoarding, hate, and lack. We should not long to return, my friends. We're being given the opportunity to stitch a new garment, one that fits all of humanity and nature. Very profound. I mean, how can you even just not pause and think about the wisdom that Brené Brown shared here, just pinpointing our very existence of accepting and normalizing inequities. So how are we going to be shaken up by this current situation? How can we have honest and courageous conversations around where those inequities are? Where are those disconnections and discontinuities? Cultural discontinuity is such an amazing and powerful concept that we could introduce here. The disconnect and discontinuity between the students' home lives and home experiences that are valued in one context, but are often not valued or utilized in another context, and that is the school community. How do we bridge the two? Right now, through remote learning, a lot of it is naturally being bridged because the parents are turning out to be teachers of their own children and continuing the learning experience remotely because there's not enough online experience or packet that comes home to the families. A lot of additional kinds of learnings are happening.
Yes, I think that goes back to the stories of your sons creating their music lessons, their music experiences. It's saying, okay, we have to address these inequities and these divide between the school and the family. And what we're doing is that we are now creating bridges. We're creating lessons where we have the community involved more. We were having parents involved more, and we're providing more choice in kids to create their own products, to find their own process. And in that process and in that creating, they're getting the parents involved and they're getting the families involved. And I think this is what it means at this level to say, we don't want to return back to normal where there's a divide. We want to continue this partnership with families. And I think districts are looking for that. I think teachers are looking at that now here and they're saying, yes, we want to keep these things.
So the next part that you're going to hear was the only part that I was able to save from our original conversation.
So one of my doctoral students who recently defended her dissertation used a very interesting theoretical lens called ambiguous loss. Ambiguous loss originated as a theoretical framework from Alzheimer's research, that a family member who has memory loss is physically there, but mentally and often emotionally absent. Now, she used this very interesting and very painful theoretical construct to apply to research on deportation and families who are separated. One family member remains in the United States, the other family member is deported, and the children go with one parent or the other. So the opposite is true. The person who had to leave, who was deported, is no longer physically present, but emotionally and mentally is still connected to the partner, to the spouse that he or she was separated from. And I could not help but think about how this theory, even though it's been applied to so many different contexts, also applies to some degree to what we're experiencing, which is what happens through Zoom is that we are connected you and I are looking at each other, we're talking, but that physical distance, that we're physically separated, that we cannot go over to each other's homes, we cannot give each other hugs, we cannot go out to eat or go for a walk on the beach together, have a happy hour somewhere. None of that is happening. So recently, Alicia Owen shared a very powerful tweet, which I immediately connected to this ambiguous loss theory. And this tweet comes from Gianpiero Petriglieri, who said, "I spoke to an old therapist friend. It's the possible deniability of each other's absence. Our minds tricked into the idea of being together when our bodies feel we are not. Dissonance is exhausting. It's easier being in each other's presence or in each other's absence than in the constant presence of each other's absence." And that was a mouthful. This last sentence is really powerful. It's easier being in each other's presence or in each other's absence than in the constant presence of each other's absence.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's beautiful. It's powerful. It's deep. It gives you pause of, yes, we do look to Zoom. We do look to Google Hangouts and FaceTime and every possible way to see each other's faces, to connect with each other. But it is exhausting. And it's not just exhausting on the eyes. It's exhausting to try to pay attention to each other. I also know about the 1 second delay. So there is this ambiguity around that you don't always see immediate reactions, because there is, through technology, the 1 second delay. So we're not always reading each other's body language correctly over the airwaves.
Right.
But nobody captured this idea of the constant presence of each other's absence, this dissonance being so exhausting. And, you know, coming from my work, being an associate dean and director of a doctoral program, we're trying in so many different ways to stay connected to our students who are already in a hybrid or online program, but trying to connect at that human level to make sure that phone calls, emails, messages, other types of interactions also happen, because the Zoom calls are so exhausting.
Okay, let's talk about the last aspect. It seems like every organization out there is really supporting teachers through this experience by offering webinars on top of webinars, and the sharing from them is just so impressive. What have you noticed about professional learning as you are facilitating teachers' learning as well?
Oh my gosh, I did something. I'm not saying this, it was amazing because I did it. It was something that I co-created yesterday. You remember I told you that I can't do this call yesterday because I was on from 8:30 to 3 nonstop?
Yeah.
But it turned out to be so rewarding and positive. So basically with this director from a New Jersey school district, we co-constructed a 4-module all-day workshop. And each of the 4 modules had a 20-25 minute pre-recorded video,
yeah,
which I recorded over 4 days. So yeah, that was better for me.
Yeah.
And then a 20-25 minute hands-on activity in a Google document. So they had to do something. Everybody had a different color. They all had to type in. They all participated. I used Padlet. I used AnswerGarden. I used Google. So different tools. They had to watch videos. They had to read an article. They had to contribute to a mind map. So we did that. And then we came back for about a 20-25 minute Q&A. And then we repeated this 4 times throughout the day.
Oh, wow.
And it was, so the teachers, by the time we got to the second, they knew exactly what to expect. I did not vary the structure. It was very predictable, about 20-25, 30 minutes, then about 20-25. So that was the structure. We had a 15 minute break, then a 45 minute lunch break, 15-minute afternoon break, and we were finished by 3. And everything was all in a gigantic Google folder that I created for them. So I worked 2 weeks on this one day, but it was worth it. And so the idea of creating a virtual PD day, I would prefer a half a day. I would prefer 2 modules rather than 4. If I were to do it ever again, if somebody said, could I do like a because webinars are easy. That's just like 1 hour and then you're done. But how to do a little bit more of a sustained learning rather than people just sitting there and they have nothing to do. They're just watching you. How do you turn that into more of a, yes, you watch me for about 20 minutes, but then you have to do something with the material, which I will be monitoring and contributing to. And then we're going to come back. Everybody's picture is, I took a picture. I didn't tweet about it yesterday because it was just too exhausted. But I took some screenshots because it was really cool.
Your story that you just shared is about rethinking professional learning in a different way. Are districts now going to offer professional learning as in flying people in, having them in a conference room? Is that the only way now? Or what you kind of talked about was something we call blended learning, where there is a clip that teachers have students watch, but in this case, it's the district or the presenter having the district, the participants watch something first, and then coming together and talking about it and interacting with it. So there's asynchronous learning, and then there's synchronous learning, and then you're really showing us how now this professional learning platform is changing. What I think you're sharing is that the things that we're doing with students that are engaging online for them, we can transfer them to workshops and professional learning opportunities to make them engaging for teachers as well. Well, Andrea, thank you again for taking the time to re-record this podcast episode using Voxer. What a great experience. I know that you said that you enjoyed it as well. And so I want to say thank you again for being so gracious. You could have easily said, no, I don't want to do this again. But you messaged me and you said, let's find a time to record again. And I thought, I don't want to bother you. Let's just try this different method. And it was a great method.
Thank you, Talon, for the opportunity. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Before we review your voice messages and the episode recap, I invite you to rate this podcast and leave a comment. Each episode takes 3 to 4 hours to record and edit, so your comments make all the hours worth it. And your reviews will help educators like you find the podcast. Yes, there are things we want to return to normal, such as sharing the same space with our students and colleagues and interacting with our students' families. But there are things that we should not return to. There are things we can do without instruction to focus on the learning and not schooling. There are things we can do to increase family participation. And finally, there are things we can do to restructure professional learning. Chief among them is providing time for teachers to collaborate. I hope this episode gives us pause to remember that sometimes obstacles reveal opportunities. Let's not miss the opportunities that this obstacle is giving us. Also, did you notice how we use Voxer to collaborate asynchronously? I strongly encourage you to use this method if you and your colleague are eager to collaborate, but you don't have time to schedule co-planning time. It does feel like you're having a conversation just without the live element. Give Voxer a try. You'll never go back to typing messages when you can simply tap and record. In the next episode, we talk with Dr. Ginny Rojas about the why, the how, the what, and the when of translanguaging. Thank you for listening. Be safe and be rooted in peace. It's your turn to play traffic light teaching. Tweet at me either your red, yellow, or green light from this particular episode. If you would like to record a question or leave a suggestion that might be aired in future episodes, please go to empoweringells.com and look for the podcast tab. Your questions might be shared by many others, and your suggestions will improve how I facilitate this podcast. If you found this podcast helpful, I would really appreciate it if you would leave a comment to help teachers who, like yourself, are passionate about supporting language learners find this podcast.